How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sundays, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, the American Forces Network, Cable Radio Network, iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn Radio. List goes on and on. The most listened to daily pro wrestling and mixed martial arts radio show in the world. A very busy day here today on the show. We're going to be joined in the second segment today by Dave Meltzer. We'll be talking all of the news from the latest edition of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, which is up right now on the front page of our website for subscribers, WrestlingObserver.com. A lot of news to get into here with Dave. And then in the final segment of the show, we're going to be joined by Bobby Fish. He is going to be talking the Ring of Honor Anniversary Show, which has taken place on Friday night. A lot of matches scheduled for that show, including his match, which is a three-way, for the ROH World Television title. Tomohiro Ishii, Roderick Strong, and Bobby Fish will be fighting for the ROH World Television title. We'll talk to him about that, plus all of the news in Ring of Honor. So Bobby Fish is going to be joining us here on the show today. We have a lot of news to talk about in terms of SmackDown, the ROH pay-per-view tomorrow. We could talk more about Shane McMahon. Not sure what there is to talk about, really, aside from the fact that Undertaker is going to appear on the show on Monday to address this whole situation. So we can talk about that on the show today. We will be taking your phone calls, text messages, etc. in the first segment of the show. So if you have something you'd like to talk about, the studio line is 425-488-0525. The toll-free line, 844-411-5411. And if you'd like to send us a text message, it is 425-780-7566. We're going to kick it off after the break. Observer Live here on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. I never thought I'd hear that on this show, but there you go, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here. WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. I want to give a shout-out today. I don't do this often, but my wife's favorite radio station is 93.1 Dapaina, I believe you say it, in Honolulu. Augie T and his crew, her favorite station. And they've been talking about wrestling every day. So I'll give a big shout-out to them. They've made this pregnancy go much easier for her. Augie T.
Wait, they've been talking about...
I'm sure they're going crazy about Shane.
They've been talking about wrestling every day?
Oh, yeah. All of a sudden it's hot or something.
Is this like anticipation of Vince like showing up on the islands? Like, what
no.
is this? That's just their thing?
Just something to talk about.
Wait, so is this how influential Shane McMahon really is?
No, it's been before Shane McMahon came back.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what it was that started this whole rigmarole, but she was baffled.
Hmm.
She goes, they keep talking about wrestling. And I said, are they talking about BJ Penn? No. Oh, they will soon. Surprised what they haven't already, actually.
What do they talk about usually on Dapaino?
I don't know. It's just like a morning show, so they talk about whatever.
Huh.
Yeah. Anyway, we got news to talk about here. Tomorrow is the Ring of Honor Anniversary Show. And it looks great. Dave's heading out there. We'll be doing a post-show tomorrow night. Dave and Filthy will be there together, enjoying themselves at the Ring of Honor show. Main event, Jay Lethal, Adam Cole, and Kyle O'Reilly. Three-way for the ROH World Heavyweight title. Sounds like a great match. Briscoes versus Tanahashi and Michael Elgin. Sounds great. Okada versus Moose. Sounds amazing. Ishii, Roderick Strong, and our guest later today, Bobby Fish. Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks against Kushida, ACH, and Matt Sydal. Alex Shelley versus Chris Daniels. And by the way, the Bullet Club match is for the never openweight six-man titles, believe it or not. We have got the War Machine against the All Night Express. No DQ for the tag team titles. BJ Whitmer and Adam Page and Hiroki Goto and Dalton Castle. What a lineup.
Yes, it is. I was kind of wondering why Kenny Omega was rocking that never six-man title and talking about being a champion without borders in their back in his, I guess, back and forth with Xavier Woods over the video game stuff. But now I see why, I guess, with Tama Tonga not coming over, they were going to get a defense out of all of the belts, whether anybody likes it or not.
Let's see what's on everybody's mind today. To the phones, you're on the air. What's going on?
Hey, this is Jim from in Virginia.
Yes, Jim from in Virginia.
Yeah. Look, I have to give credit where credit is due to TNA. I was watching Lockdown Tuesday night, and the lethal Lockdown match for the Knockouts was, as the crowd was shouting, it was awesome.
Really?
Yes.
I need to get you and Dave on the show together because Dave thought it was horrible.
Well, they must have heard me complain about Mia Yim only pile driving Madison Rayne, because the end was a chair pile driver, package pile driver to Gail Kim from Jade.
Mm. So they set up a championship match.
Well, I don't know. See, it was like I said, what happened was it's actually a good
it sounds
story
like TNA line. Back in the day. Well, I don't know.
Well, it's actually a good storyline. What happened was it's supposed to have been 3-on-3, but it was Gail and Velvet against the whole dollhouse, Rebel and Jade and Marty Bell. But what happened was, you say, Madison supposedly got hurt. I guess, you know, the dollhouse did something. She couldn't perform. Well, then Maria comes in there, and she's all, you know, oh, it's so sad. Yeah, playing a real big heel. And then Gail says, well, put up a shut-up, get out there and help us in the ring. Well, they do it kind of like, you know, like a Royal Rumble match, you know. And she comes out there, she kind of lolling real slow, comes out. She gets right to the ring, and she acts like she's going to step in the ring. She shakes her head, no. And she gets out and locks the cage, and they're just taking a butt-whipping after that.
So you're telling me we had a lethal Lockdown War Game-style match with 5 participants?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, I'm going to watch in the next couple of days. I'll give you my thoughts on it, Jim.
Okie dokie.
Okie dokie. Thanks very much for the call. This guy here says, Brian, what exactly is the reason you hated the Shane McMahon versus Kurt Angle feud? Because you thought it was an insult for an Olympic gold medalist to fight a non-wrestler? The fans loved it, and it was a great match. Does that mean you were also against a Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Vince McMahon feud? You need to keep an open mind to some things in wrestling. I need to keep an open mind to some things in wrestling? I'm going to remember all of this after the Shane McMahon Undertaker match is over. I should save every one of these text messages just to remind everybody when it ends.
Now, is your issue that he's really truly going to be a character you're going to have to see wrestling or involved in the mix? What is it exactly? Because
I don't have an issue. I keep trying to explain this to everybody. I'm just saying that my memories.
But that's the thing. You are explaining it with such, like, you're quick to jump out there and explain this of, like, look, what are people so, and they tell you, and you still can't believe it. It's like, I don't think they.
No, he yelled at me because I didn't think that Shane McMahon versus Kurt Angle was the best thing for Kurt Angle's career. Now, what that has to do with Shane McMahon's return in 2016, I don't know.
I'm just
telling you that at the time, Kurt Angle selling for Shane McMahon's wacky offense didn't do anything for me. Now, that one match that he's talking about was an unbelievably great match. It was a great match. But that doesn't mean that I needed to see Shane McMahon beating main eventers.
And it was a great spectacle. It wasn't a great match. And there was the thing with Shane McMahon, too. I mean, nobody remembers the headlock takeover in the Steve Blackman match. They remember both of them falling off the Titantron. You know, that's what they remember. They don't remember anything other in that Angle Shane McMahon match than Shane being flipped through the glass at the top of the stage. I mean, that's really all anybody truly remembers from those matches anyway. These aren't memorable matches. They were memorable moments, and that's, again, people tend to forget about the crisp edges of things sometimes when the focus of the middle part of it's great.
Now listen, if the return of Shane McMahon results in hot crowds at every Raw from now until WrestleMania, I'm the happiest guy in the world. Great! That sounds awesome to me. I don't know how the match is going to be. Undertaker versus Shane McMahon in a cell. If this were like a no-holds-barred match, I'd be like, okay, this thing could be pretty exciting. But they're in a cage, and allegedly they're going to be trapped in there. Now, I do think that somehow people are going to get in and out, which
well, of course
kills the Hell in a Cell stipulation, but who cares? It's been killed anyway. But the point is, I don't know. this match could be really ugly and not in a good way. And I just want people to remember. I just want people to remember this after that match is over.
I agree with you. I do. But you also have a guy in Shane McMahon that is going to go and pull out every stop he can. And it may not be beautiful, but I can't see it being, you know, Viano's Psycho Circus level as far as quality of match goes either. You know, they are going to pull out all of the stops. And I know what you're saying about the cage, but when done properly, and I'm not saying WWE is going to do it properly, but Jerry Lawler in Memphis with Austin Idol, Tommy Rich hiding under the cage, Paulie Dangerously, that whole thing. If you can do something like that, then it really doesn't matter. And people aren't going to hold it against the stipulations of Hell in the Cell. If a spectacle match at WrestleMania that everybody knows is a spectacle match has got all of these bells and whistles and all of the nonsense that is likely going to be involved with it.
Nothing to consider is he's 46 and he just started training a couple of weeks ago. So I don't know what he's going to be able to do physically. Listen to me. I thought that his return on Monday, if for no other reason, the segment was extraordinarily compelling and the fans loved it. So I thought it was great. I loved it. But we got 5 more weeks until WrestleMania. We got 5 more weeks of Shane on television. We got 5 more weeks of WWE creative. Let's just wait and see what we're going to have by the time Mania rolls around. And you got to think of something else. Shane McMahon right now is the mega babyface, but it is The Undertaker at WrestleMania in Texas. So I don't know what kind of reaction we're going to get when Shane McMahon in his tennis shoes and his jersey is in there beating the hell out of Undertaker in a Hell in a Cell match. It could get ugly in other ways as well. I'm intrigued. I'm happy. Never leave me alone, damn it. Back in a moment, Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network. Brian Alvarez, Mike Sempervivi, and Dave Meltzer is joining us here today. Dave, what's going on?
Always a ton.
So, I got a text message this morning from somebody that says, from Daniel, "Hi, Brian. I am at the Arizona Boxing MMA Commission meeting. They approved UR.TV promotion license and the event on March 20, 2016. So it's still happening, it appears.
I expected that it would happen. I don't know about if Ken Shamrock's going to fight, but I'm guessing that he will because he didn't really take that much punishment.
Yes,
the last fight. But, well, I mean, he was still TKO'd, and there's usually some sort of a suspension that's going to be put on. So that'll be interesting to see if he's allowed. There's a good chance he won't be, actually.
This is the show with Chael Sonnen and Michael Bisping in a grappling match, Kurt Angle versus Rey Mysterio in a pro wrestling match, Ken Shamrock versus Dan Severn, MMA, allegedly, and Roy Jones Jr. versus a fan. Now, I guess first question.
It's pretty hard to conceive that somebody would approve that, but there you go.
So this, first off, Chael, let's talk about all of these and the issues. Chael Sonnen and Michael Bisping, UFC is, I don't know if they would be cool with this, but this match is going to happen?
They've had a policy of letting their guys do grappling.
Do you expect that to end at some point?
It's happened all the time, and they've never stepped in. If I was them, I wouldn't allow it. But to them, they allow it.
All righty.
Because I wouldn't allow people under contract to do a pay-per-view or something like that for another company, no matter what form of thing it is. And they've got the legal right to stop it. So they are obviously approving it.
We've also got Kurt Angle and Rey Mysterio, and Mysterio is under contract to Lucha Underground, and this does appear to be broadcast at least on internet pay-per-view. How is this one getting okayed?
I don't know what I'd have to see his contract if it allows that. I've seen Lucha Underground contracts, and I don't know that internet pay-per-view is addressed. It's television that they're concerned with. Like, they couldn't televise the match. But if it's internet pay-per-view, I think it's fine.
Hmm. And Roy Jones Jr. versus a fan, it is some sort of contest online, and I guess they'll pick somebody, vet them, have them do medicals, so it's kind of a gimmick in the sense that it's not really a fan. I mean, it is a fan, but it's not like someone's coming out of the crowd live at the event.
No, but it's still if you're putting a real boxer, even if he's old and diminished, against a guy who's not, you know, a real world champion boxer against someone who has not actually boxed, that should not be allowed. I mean, this fighting is, it's like fighting serious stuff. It's, you know, even if Roy Jones is going to take it easy on him, that shouldn't be, I'm not in favor of that at all. That's, you know, guys can get hurt. We just saw what happened last week.
It is much scarier today than it was last week at this time.
As always, people who are not trained to fight that are fighting is scary no matter what. It's always been scary. That's why I hate tough man contests, because, you know, you put guys in that situation that don't know any defense and that aren't in condition to fight, and they can get hurt really bad. And, you know, especially against a Roy Jones, I'm sure Roy Jones will be not trying to hurt the guy, but it still shouldn't happen.
We had an email the other day from somebody who was wondering about the Global Cruiserweight Tournament. And in fact, we've been getting a lot of emails and text messages about that. You talked last night about how you expect Kota Ibushi to get into it. I guess if anybody listening to this...
I think there's a good chance, yeah.
Okay, if anybody listening to this has not heard and has not had a chance to read The Observer, which of course you can grab at WrestlingObserver.com, tell everybody the idea of this tournament and some of the names that you've heard that may be involved.
I mean, I've heard a bunch of names. I mean, it's 32-man tournament, and they're going to pick the names. I know they're going to bring some people in for tryouts to see if they can get in the tournament. They want guys from all over the world. It's a single elimination. There'll be probably three matches for the most part, maybe four in some shows, but it'll be a weekly one-hour show that will air right after NXT, starting in July for 10 weeks. And I would suspect, you know, it's kind of a combination of bringing in indie guys that are not under contract to other promotions, and they're tryouts in the sense that if they get over big to the audience, they can get a WWE contract, and it's a smart idea for WWE as far as like getting talent in, and they can see if they get over with the crowd and how they work before committing to them, just based on maybe a workout in the gym or something. And you know, it's a chance to see, you know, how they, you know, as far as crowd interaction and things like that, that you just can't see, you know, trying somebody out normally. So, I mean, it's good for them, and there should be some, if you can pick 32 guys from all over the world that aren't under contract, you should be able to get a lot of really good wrestlers and some fantastic matches, even though there will be matches that will have interesting style clashes. But that's good, too, because I think that's a learning experience for everyone.
You know what's weird? There's a lot of weird things, but... You've got a small handful of guys that have been called up from NXT. Neville, for example, is kind of mired in the mid-card. Bo Dallas is a total jobber. And you've got all of these great guys that are still in NXT. Finn Balor, Samoa Joe, Sami Zayn, the list goes on and on. And if
Some of those guys should be on the main roster pretty soon, though.
I sure hope so. Now, if you look at what NXT has been doing and what they're doing with this tournament... They're bringing in guys from the outside.
Well, in theory, this isn't NXT, although it's going to be taped at NXT, so, you know, whatever. It's going to be the matches are going to be taped as part of, you know, like if they do an NXT taping, they'll probably, instead of doing 4 hours of NXT like they usually do, they'll probably be taping every 2 weeks, and it'll be 2 hours of NXT and 2 hours of the tournament.
So they're not even calling it like the NXT Global Cruiserweight.
It's it's a WWE tournament, but it's going to be taped at NXT.
Okay. It's just weird that there's so many things being done, but very little is trickling over to the main roster. The main roster seems to be exactly
the
same.
The women have trickled over. Women have, you know, they attempted to change the main roster.
A little bit. I mean, they tried, but they failed. But it is interesting.
Listening to you guys talk last night, I mean, Dave, so Shinsuke Nakamura is getting paid WWE main event money, and he's going to be in NXT for the foreseeable future. I mean, it's a...
Not necessarily WWE main event money as in the millions of dollars, but WWE money, yes.
Main roster money.
He's going to be there for his... I mean, I don't know how long he's going to be there, but like I said, anything more than 4 months is ridiculous. And even 4 months is pushing it. I mean, I think it's good for him to have a little bit of a transition because of the style and everything. But the guy is 35, 36 years old, and he should be, you know, he came to be on the national stage, not to be in NXT. If he wanted to be on an NXT stage, he could have stayed where he was, really. But he's going to be on the national stage at some point. It's just, you know, if he's going to be there for a year, that's kind of silly.
I guess my whole point is that it's just very interesting to see the main roster largely churning along and operating literally as it always has, despite all of these very interesting things going on down in their own developmental league.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're two different mentalities. I mean, one is aimed at hardcore fans and ROH fans and things like that, and the other is aimed at the larger, more broad audience, whatever that consists of these days, which nobody really seems to have their fingers on, and I don't think anyone really fully understands. And I mean, and when I say anyone, I don't mean anyone, because nobody's really seemed to be able to make it click to anything more than an average level, which is where they're connecting at an average level right now, not at any kind of a big level.
Now, granted, it is way too early to make a. It's way too early to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway, and time will tell, but there is a brand that is directed at the casual fan base, and there's another brand that appears to be directed at the hardcore fan base, and as things stand right now, one of them is making a lot of money, and one of them is not, and
yes.
It's interesting when you have people that call this show in anywhere that are like, oh, they need to blah, 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 blah. And right now, we really don't have a lot of evidence that a product directed at the hardcore fans has the potential to be a big moneymaker. Maybe it does.
No. It doesn't in any business. I mean, I shouldn't say in any business. There's businesses, but in any
ours.
Kind of a big time business, it's the same thing with football. You could, if you had a football league and you aimed it only for the most hardcore football fans, it wouldn't be as successful as the broader. You know, that's just, or music or anything. And I mean, you can make money going to the hardcores. It can be done, and there's companies that will do it, but it will never be, it can't be as big. I mean, that's the thing. The only question is how well is the big brand doing as far as mainstream and really connecting with mainstream? And it's like, you know, there've been periods where they've done very well, and I don't think this is one of those periods, but I'm not saying they're doing bad. They're doing, like I said, I kind of feel it's average, maybe even a little below average, really. But it's not like it's, you know, in the mid-90s, you know, the mid-90s when they weren't connecting with anyone. And even like, you know, I'd say 2002 to 2005, even though the ratings were a lot higher, I kind of felt them really falling down until Cena kind of started picking them back up. And now I think they're at an okay level.
All right, we got about a minute here. What are some of the big stories we got in the Observer this week?
Big story on Shane McMahon, just the whole deal of a lot of the moves he's tried to make over his career, his success or lack thereof in other ventures, attempts, and the whole story of how this match with The Undertaker came to be, which is interesting in itself. And then we got McGregor and Diaz fight came to be, and stories on all of the big shows over the past week, and BJ Penn, and the WrestleMania, the updates on the lineup, and where kind of everything's going, and who's involved, and it's just kind of the build to that.
Well, Dave, I want to thank you so much for doing the show, as always, and Dave and I are going to be up tomorrow after the Ring of Honor show. He's going to Vegas to check it out. You can grab the Observer, as well as all of the back issues, up at WrestlingObserver.com if you sign up. So head up there and check that out, everybody. We'll be back in just a moment with more Observer Live on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Back here on the show, Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And Bobby Fish of Ring of Honor is here on the line. Bobby, what's going on?
Hey, Brian, how are you?
Not too bad. Are you having a very busy day today?
Yeah, I mean, my day started pretty early this morning, but then it was interrupted when my flight was canceled. So I spent most of the morning trying to reschedule, and now I'm looking at getting into Vegas tomorrow morning as opposed to what was supposed to be this morning.
Oh, man. But you're going to get there.
Yeah, I mean, assuming nothing gets canceled tomorrow.
Is Tom Lawler picking you up from the airport?
I was going to see him today. I assume I will see him at some point still over the weekend. But yeah, we were supposed to do some training today. I don't know if Tom will be picking me up.
How often do you train, and I guess what's your schedule as far as any sort of MMA, jiu-jitsu, stand-up training outside of pro wrestling?
For me, kickboxing is generally a pretty consistent thing for me. Probably twice a week. Sometimes I'll get three sessions in. I'll do some grappling here and there, but I probably am a bit more consistent with my kickboxing than anything else.
Have you been a lot? I mean, obviously you're an MMA fan, but when did you first get into it?
Kind of gradually. Like if you go all the way back, I first started martial arts when I was about eight years old. I started Taekwondo, which I think a lot of people kind of have that same story. Taekwondo was a pretty pretty regular thing, I think, for people, at least where I grew up. You know, it was when the karate craze was like a thing. And for me as a kid, I didn't even, until I started doing Taekwondo, I didn't realize that Taekwondo was not karate. I thought it was a type of karate. And I realize now how incorrect I was.
There's still a lot of parents that when their kids are wild, they just know to take them to karate class. They cannot,
yeah.
They don't know anything about Taekwondo, jiu-jitsu, judo. It's all karate.
Yeah, it's definitely an Americanized thing. I mean, I remember as a kid growing up, I thought that people who pronounced it as karate were pretentious in the way that they would go, you know, that they would insist on calling it karate. But now, having spent a lot of time in Japan and understanding the language a little bit, no, it's actually, that's how it's pronounced. We just Americanized it like the assholes that we are half the time, and you know, just call it karate.
So you went from karate, and then how did that expand into where you are today?
I started kickboxing as a teenager, just as we moved more towards sparring, and there was quite a bit more contact as I got older. Obviously, the gym that I was training at the time, they started kickboxing more, and guys were taking fights, and the gym just started to resemble more of a kickboxing gym and less of a dojo, you know, less of a karate dojo. At the time, it was U.S. freestyle karate, and as everybody just started getting more active kickboxing, the school just turned more into a kickboxing school than it did a dojo.
And when did the love of pro wrestling tie into all of this? Was there a wrestler that did, was it like X-Pac that threw a lot of kicks and you were like, this is pretty cool?
No, I would think the one that had the biggest effect on me was the Great Muta. As a kid, I was enamored with martial arts, and, you know, Bruce Lee was something that caught my eye at first. And then I had watched pro wrestling as a kid, you know, with my dad and stuff. And to see those two worlds kind of combine when the first time I saw Muta was, you know, that was definitely something that stuck out. I remember that specifically.
As a child, did you ever consider getting some sort of blood capsule or something and attempting to blow mist during one of your karate classes?
No, but I would have liked to. You know, I think the first time that I saw the mist was Kabuki, actually, and it was, you know, and all of that just kind of added to the mystique. It's part of what makes, you know, what makes pro wrestling so intoxicating for people.
So where did this all begin for you in terms of actually getting into the business? I mean, was this something when you were a kid and you saw Muta, you were like, someday I'm going to be blowing mist at folks and kicking them really hard, or how did you go from wherever you were to becoming a professional wrestler?
No, definitely not. I was a fan of it. I don't know that I seriously considered doing it though as a kid. It was I was completely obsessed with football once I started to get a little bit older. Like when I was real young, it was all about martial arts. And then as I started playing football at 9. So by the time I was like 10 or 11, I was pretty football obsessed. So pro wrestling was just something that I liked, something that I was a fan of. I didn't really think about doing it, although as I progressed through high school, I had quite a few friends that, you know, for whatever reason, you would bust balls, and they would say that I was going to end up being a pro wrestler. But I don't know that I ever really entertained that as an option.
Until you met Tony DeVito, is that right?
Yeah. I moved out to San Diego, and I was probably 23, 24. I was pretty directionless. I had some money saved up, and I was in San Diego with some friends of mine that had moved out there, and was just kind of burning through the money that I had. I had finished college. I didn't know what I was going to do. I started working for a marketing company, and that was the first time I had to go on the road for this marketing company. And we were in, you know, for somebody who didn't do a lot of traveling previous to that, like I was in, I think within the span of 2 months, I had visited like 6 states, and that was definitely not the amount of travel I was accustomed to. And during that time, I ran across the Pure Dynamite book.
Oh, yeah.
And when I was a kid, I was a big Dynamite Kid fan, but I lost track of him when he left WWE, and you know, not being the age of social media then, you know, I just didn't know what happened to him. You know, a lot of times these guys would disappear from our regional wrestling program, and, you know, they might as well have dropped off the face of the earth. So even if it was just out of curiosity, I picked up that book and I bought it because I was on the road with people, you know, that I didn't know. I had just met these people, and I'm. It's not that I'm antisocial, but you know, there was definitely a lot of time to spend with yourself, and so I read that book, and that was probably the first time I seriously considered like doing it.
You read the Dynamite Kid's book, and
yes.
And this compelled you to get into wrestling.
Possibly, yeah. Yeah.
Some people will read that book and it would compel them to get out of wrestling.
Yeah. Well, you would think with especially where he ends up. But the whole career that went on in Japan of his that I was unaware of as a kid, you know, and that's when I was a huge fan of his. But I was completely unaware of the Dynamite that existed in Japan previous to his WWF run, you know, and it was that part of the book that really got me thinking like, well, shit, I want to go to Japan. I think so less about the where he ended and more about the stops along the way, I think it was for me.
Why did you choose to not stick with Jerk Jackson? That's a money name right there.
I stuck with it for a lot longer than people would expect. it just when I first started wrestling, I think like a lot of guys, you don't feel comfortable being called by your name. Like you feel as though, okay, I need to have a gimmick name, a stage name, whatever you want to call it. And so for me, picking one was kind of a necessary step, I thought. I thought I had to have one, And when Tony told me that I was going to go have my first match, it kind of was unexpected. He kind of surprised me with it. It was coming up that weekend, and he asked, you know, what are you going to call yourself? And I was like, well, fuck, I don't know, because I don't want to be Bobby Fish. I just didn't think that I would be able to do what it was I needed to do if I was, you know, going to go by my real name. You know, you learn along the way, and I realize now that it would have probably been the best move for me. But at the time, I would have to drive about 2 hours to get to DeVito's place where DeVito lived. And on that drive, I remember on that day, there was a song by Jack Johnson. Or no, not Jack Johnson. John, who the hell was it?
John Mayer?
There's a musician. Yeah, Jack Johnson, I think, was his name.
I think it's Jack Johnson. I think so.
I think so, too. Yeah, I think that's what it was.
And you thought, man, what a jerk.
DeVito asked, just out of being put on the spot, I was like, I don't know, man. Maybe I'll be Jerk Jackson, kind of as a joke. And he loved
Bobby.
It.
Bobby, if I would have been traveling the roads with you, I would have given you one piece of advice, and that would have been never tell somebody something that you think is just a joke, because then you're stuck with it.
Yeah, I kind of was. It could have been worse, because DeVito wanted to be Jerk Johnson. He thought that was funnier. I stuck with Jackson. I don't know, maybe 2 years?
2 years.
Maybe longer.
You said Jerk Jackson is a joke, and of course he jumped on this and thought, how about Jerk Johnson?
Yeah.
Oh, man, you're lucky you didn't get that one.
Yeah, of course. And then his rationale was just, you know, people are going to remember that name.
He was right.
So, and as him being my trainer, you know, I considered, still to this day, I consider Tony's advice valuable, and I think that there's I trust him. So I was like, you know what? Yeah, that's what I'm going to be. And I did that for a while.
And you survived to this day. And as we come back from the break, we'll talk about the ROH anniversary show. It will be Tomohiro Ishii, Roderick Strong, and Jerk Jackson. Three-way for the ROH World Heavyweight title. Stand by. Back in a moment. Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Back here on the show, Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Bobby Fish is on the show today, at the Bobby Fish, if you want to follow him on Twitter. Tomorrow, the ROH anniversary show on pay-per-view, three-way for the ROH World Television title, Tomohiro Ishii, Roderick Strong, and Bobby Fish. Bobby, I presume you're very excited for that match.
Yeah. To be doing it live on pay-per-view and doing it in Las Vegas, fight capital of the world, it just kind of adds an element to it that we don't always have.
Let's get some plugs in. Besides your Twitter, anything else you want people to know about? Your Pro Wrestling Tees store, for example.
Yeah, Kyle and I are on Pro Wrestling Tees. I don't know. How do they do it? Is it /
ProWrestlingTees.com/Bobby Fish.
Yeah, and I think you would, if you put in Kyle's name or mine, it will go to the same site, and then I think you can, there are tandem shirts, there are single shirts. I think we put it all on one.
Well, there you go.
I should probably know this.
Well, thankfully, I'm here today. At the Bobby Fish on Twitter, there's a link right there to the ProWrestlingTees.com store. So that is the
Look
easiest.
At that. It works. So
That's
well.
Right. It does work. Bobby, we're totally out of time. I want to thank you so much for doing the show today, and best of luck tomorrow in the three-way.
Okay, Brian. Thank you very much, man. I appreciate it.
No problem. We'll have you on again soon. And, of course, thanks, everybody, for listening. We are out of here every day, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, free, Sports Byline USA, Sirius Satellite Radio. Check it out next time. Thanks, Mike, and everybody at Byline. We'll talk to you again next time. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network.